Get your fill of baseball news and beer reviews at foulballarea.com. Follow our blog for the latest news around the baseball world and read about some of our favorite ballpark beers. Tune into the podcast every Wednesday as we take a deep dive into the topics of the day. Stay connected by signing up for our mailing list or following us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at foulballarea. Now, here's today's episode of the Foulball Area Podcast with Matthew Atkins and Trey Lyle. What's up, everybody? Welcome to the latest episode of the Foulball Area Podcast. I'm your host, Matthew Atkins. Pleased to be joined by my co-host, Trey Lyle, who is coming to us from Kansas via Zoom. Once again, Trey, how are you doing on this beautiful Wednesday afternoon, morning, whatever time you guys are listening to the podcast?
Pretty good, you know, just enjoying it. Obviously, we record this on Tuesday before because, you know, things take time to upload. Getting into the meat of the baseball season and obviously the COVID news affecting the local team here, the Royals, as of tomorrow. So Wednesday, when this podcast airs, is going to play the doubleheader with the Reds after the Reds had their weekend series canceled. So COVID affecting here personally in terms of baseball, but you know, I looked at it the other day, and if you thought, like, the Royals are 4.5 games back in the wild card, and they're, like, they have 8 wins. Like, it's so pretty exciting times in baseball if you look at the wild card. And another big thing, you know who's in last place?
Who?
The Boston Red Sox.
Yeah, I bet that makes you pretty happy. They are not having a good season at all.
No, and I feel kind of bad for them. Obviously, they traded Mookie, and, you know, I think when a team was like, we're going to rely on our lineup, and I think that would work for a lot of 162. And I think when it comes to this short season, they just don't have the pitching staff for it at this point. So Yankees get the 4-game sweep. And you think about the competitiveness of the series. The Yankees just won 10 straight against the Red Sox now, which is the longest since the 50s. That just shows how competitive this rivalry is in general. So pretty fun weekend.
Here's the thing that I don't like about the Red Sox, and we weren't even planning on talking about this, but they have been so good in the past decade plus that I don't have any sympathy for them right now that they're terrible. I see their fans on Twitter and social media talking about, woe is me, the Red Sox are terrible, I hate baseball this year. Deal with it. You've won 4 championships since 2004. I don't care. The Braves haven't won a championship since 95. They haven't won a pennant since last century. I don't care that you're bad this year. You guys are so spoiled with all your sports. Get over it.
Yeah, basically, I mean,
that's
every,
my rant for the day.
All 4 major teams have won a championship since 2000. And so And the Celtics are the only one that's won one. The rest have won multiples. And obviously, you know, the Patriots lose Tom Brady, and I think that has to play a lot into a majority of Red Sox fans. There are some Red Sox fans I know. Most Red Sox fans I know personally probably are not an all-encompassing Boston sports fan. But if you look at the Boston sports fan, it's not the great times for you, but, like, you've had a pretty good, you know, 12 years of success. So you can – chill out. As an Eagles fan who's had one Super Bowl in their lifetime, as a Virginia Tech fan, which is, I think, like, up there with Stinkman as it can get, I think, you know, chill. Me as a Yankees fan, I have to, like, judge it because of their championships, even though they won a whole decade, their first decade ever without going to a World Series. So, and I, like I said, I will always root for the Braves with the local ties. And so, I would love to see the Braves get a title. And so, I am in lockstep with you. And so, great rant. Agree with the rant. I think I might have one a little bit later in the show, just as a tease.
All right. I look forward to it. But let's get into what we had planned to talk about today. And that is the San Diego Padres. Fernando Tatis Jr. is insane.
Yeah.
He has a league-leading 11 home runs, 28 RBIs right now, an OPS of 1.109. He is playing on another level right now, almost a lock for NL MVP. I mean, you gotta think that he's gonna keep this up for the rest of the season. But there was a little bit of controversy the other night, and we'll get into that in just a second. But Fernando Tatis Jr. has just been so much fun to watch this season.
Yeah, and it's for a Padres team that is in contention, especially for that wild card spot. I think the Rockies and the Dodgers have kind of cleared away in the NL West, but I think the Padres could end up in that wild card spot come I guess the end of the 60 game season. But Yeah, Fernando Tatis is had a lot of hype behind him. Obviously, ESPN the magazine talked about him maybe being the face of baseball. And holy cow, is he's just, I mean, he's just wrecking baseballs. And I think he's a phenomenal shortstop on the field. He's showing he's going to be a top five player for years to come in Major League Baseball, maybe the best infielder for years to come. I definitely put him on my short list, him with Gleyber Torres. And so you think about the shortstop position, and it was Derek Jeter. Derek Jeter was the face of Major League Baseball. So that position definitely has some iconic kind of feel in this last 20 years since 2000, definitely. And so guys like Tatis, I want to throw Gleyber Torres in because of his talent. I think those two guys might clear themselves as the next kind of top tier shortstops in Major League Baseball. But yeah, you're nailed on the head. Tatis is I honestly can't even describe how great he's playing right now. Like, he's on a next level. He's on a Mike Trout kind of level, I think is the best way to put it.
Yeah, definitely. And like you said, you do see a lot of shortstops become almost the face of the league, especially with Derek Jeter. And he was really helped out, obviously, by playing in New York, being with the most storied team, the biggest market in the league. But you see guys like Francisco Lindor, who had a couple of great seasons. He's still one of the best shortstops in the league, and he's become almost one of the faces of baseball, even though he plays for the Cleveland Indians. But the thing is, you know, despite San Diego being such a big city, like, it's one of the top 10 biggest cities in the U.S. by population, but they're like a small market team because they just don't get a whole lot of attention. They're like, there's the Dodgers, the Angels, the Giants, the A's, and then there's that team down in really Southern California that no one ever talks about, the Padres. But I think Fernando Tatis Jr. is trying to change that. And some of the other guys they have on this team, they do have a pretty solid team, a young team, and I think they will be good here, you know, if not this year, in the couple of years to come. But this would be a good year for them to make a playoff run, considering the expanded playoffs that MLB has this season.
Yeah, obviously they paid for Machado, and then they got a guy, I think, like an Eric Hosmer, was a perfect signing, a good veteran presence, a great leader on their team, and kind of will help them out a lot. And obviously he played a role in what happened on Monday night.
Yeah, so Monday night there was a little bit of controversy in the Padres-Rangers game. And, you know, I consider myself kind of a baseball traditionalist. I don't like the designated hitter. I don't like this runner on second base. I think there are times when it's acceptable to throw at someone on the other team. Never at their head, but at, you know, torso, mid body. I think there are times where it's acceptable to pitch at somebody if retaliation is called for. But there are some unwritten rules that just have no place in the game because they just don't make sense. So here's what happened the other night. The Padres were playing the Rangers. They were already up 7 runs. Fernando Tatis Jr. came up to the plate, worked himself to a 3-0 count, and then on the 3-0 pitch, he swung at a fastball in the middle of the zone and hit a grand slam. So the Rangers manager, Chris Woodward, he got mad. The next batter was Manny Machado. The Rangers threw at him. Then after the game, the Padres manager, Jace Tingler, pretty much scolded Tatis for swinging on a 3-0 pitch. Tatis ended up apologizing for hitting a grand slam. You should never apologize for hitting a grand slam. And you should never stop trying to score runs. No lead is ever really safe. So even if they're up 7-0 already, you can't blame him for taking a swing at a pitch that's right there, a perfect pitch, and hitting a grand slam. Like, it just doesn't make sense for everyone to come out and scold him for hitting a grand slam. If you don't want someone to hit a home run on your 3-0 pitch, make that pitch better. That's it. That's what it boils down to.
Plain and simple, I completely agree with you. I think part of the played in the part for the Padres kind of talking to Tatis was both the manager and the general manager both have a lot of ties to the Rangers organization. So I think if it was another team, I think they wouldn't be as heavily involved. Eric Hosmer talked to him a little bit about it either. And the fact he threw at Manny Machado next was stupid. I think this is the dumbest, like, I don't get why there's an argument. It's a baseball game. Your goal is to score as many runs as you possibly can, especially in a 60-game season. So let's say he gets, like, struck out there, and the Rangers, as the home team, come back and win that game. Well, that grand, if he didn't take the pitch, the grand slam means a lot. It might be a little bit different story if the umpire, if the manager called for him to take the pitch no matter what, which you see in some cases. But still, if you're the pitcher, throw a good 3-0 pitch. You also walk the guy, two guys before it. Like, it's not like the Padres hit around. It's literally, you put two guys on base. You got yourself in that situation, and you give the hottest player in baseball a chance to hit a freaking missile because you lay a lay a ball across the plate. Of course he's going to hit it. If I was good at baseball and saw that pitch, I'm going to freaking hit it. The unwritten rules, some of them, most of them are stupid, plain and simple. Like, the idea is to make this game fun. And I think, like, especially for younger players and younger fans, like, if I want to see a bat flip, I want to see a dude go yard again at a 3-0 pitch and hit a grand slam. It's a freaking grand slam. Like, how many of those do you hit in your career? Like, maybe 10? Think about that. Like, it's a rare opportunity, and it doesn't matter the score. It was a 3-0 pitch. Throw a better pitch. Like, it's that plain and simple. Jeff Passan tweeted about it today. He said, if you don't want someone to swing on a 3-0 pitch, throw a good 3-0 pitch. Also, don't start up 3-0. Like, throw good pitches. Like,
yeah, exactly.
Like, it's that simple. Like, this is so dumb to me that people got upset with Fernando Tatis Jr. Like, it baffles me, like, sometimes these unwritten rules. Like, to me, I think you want to talk about sportsmanship. I think if this game was, like, you know, like 14-3, then yeah. But this was a 7-run game, and you've seen many of times where 7-run leads go up like that. Like, that's not unheard of to come back. I think if you get in the double digit kind of category, it might change a little bit. But still, if I was Fernando Tatis and I saw the pitch like that, and I'm like, I'm gonna go yard. You can't take it. The only exception I would say is if the manager gave him a signal to take it, because you listen to your manager. That I would have a little hesitation on that, but otherwise, I'm like, he's in the right. You shouldn't have to apologize. And honestly, and this goes back, he handled the situation better than the Astro players did, and he did something right. Like, that was, I saw that today. Like, that is crazy to me too. But Fernando Tatis literally just hit a great. What is he supposed to do there? Take the pitch? It would have been a strike. Someone also brought a scenario. It was Johnny Bench tweeted. He's like, all right, so if he took the pitch there, then what if it would have been 3-1, great pitch at 3-2, gets struck out, and then the Rangers come back?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
And wait, then everyone's going to come back to him and say, he should have hit that. Because that was a terrible pitch.
You should never stop trying to score runs. I mean, it's a game. It's a competition.
It's the goal of baseball.
It's a competition. You're trying to score as many runs as possible and beat the other team. So when you have a chance to do that, why not do that? This unwritten rule.
Just pitch better.
Exactly. I mean, that is what it boils down to. If you don't want someone to hit a home run,
pitch better.
Throw a better pitch.
I could have thrown a better pitch there. Like, let's be real. Like, he threw – it looked like me. He hung him a slider. Like, that's – I would have to look at it again. But, like, that's what it looked like to me. And you're giving the hottest player in baseball the like, easy pitch to hit. What is he going to do?
I don't know, man. I don't know. I am a little encouraged, though, because, I mean, everybody has been talking about this on social media all day today. But I've seen from a lot of players and from a lot of media members – they're in support of Fernando Tatis here. They're saying, yeah, if you have a good pitch to hit, hit it. The only people that I've seen really upset about it are the two managers in the game. And so I am a little encouraged that more people are coming around to the thought that if you can score a run, score it. If you can hit a pitch, hit it. And not just going by these old, unwritten, outdated rules. So that is a little encouraging. But it's got to be discouraging for Tatis that his manager just kind of threw him under the bus. I mean, this is the guy that's supposed to be mentoring you, molding you into a great player. And he came out in the press conference after the game and pretty much just threw Tatis under the bus and was like, yeah, he really shouldn't have hit that pitch. Like, you're his manager and you're going to say that in the press conference after the game?
Yeah, I think a part of the play into this is the ties to the Rangers organization. I think if it was any other team, I think they probably wouldn't have been as, I don't want to say defensive or like kind of... Yeah, like what you said. I only word I can think of is like defensive against what Tatis did, or is probably the best way to put it. So I think they had a lot of ties to the Rangers organization. So definitely it had a passion. It'd be like as if like Mike Trout had a 3-0 pitch against the Cubs and Joe Maddon being upset by it because he has a lot of history with the Cubs. So I think that's the only reason why I think that played a big part in why the manager and the GM were upset. You obviously saw Eric Hosmer talk to him and probably say this was not the best thing you could have done. But I think that's probably how it should have been handled. Like have Eric Hosmer sit him down and be like, "Hey kid, look, this is what's going to happen." Because here's the thing: the only reason why you want to talk to him and say, "Think about it next time," is because you know the ball is going to be thrown at you. And let's say it hit. I think it was Machado. Let's say it hits Machado because that was a 93 mile per hour fastball, which I think is way worse than like throwing at him than that next thing, the action, the reaction, than it was the home run. And it hits Machado on the hip, and he's out for the year because he got hurt. I think the Rangers would have been in the wrong in the situation, but that's the only thing I think maybe could have came out of this. Like, and that's me kind of playing a little devil's advocate here. But I think overall, I would side with Tatis. I don't think he should have apologized. He should have been like, throw a better pitch. That's what I would have said.
Exactly. That is really what it boils down to. But the main takeaway from this is Fernando Tatis Jr. is on another level right now. He is looking like he will be the MVP because I don't see any reason that he won't keep this up for the rest of the season. And it should be a very, very exciting season to watch. As I said on our new Monday morning podcast, Mornings with Matt, Tatis, Judge, and Trout were tied with 9 home runs on the season. Now Tatis has 11. The other two still have 9 home runs. So it should be a very exciting home run race to watch as we continue going through the 2020 MLB season. Before we move on in today's podcast, for all my Rockingham County, Shenandoah Valley area listeners, the 2020 RCBL finals begin tonight, Wednesday, August 19th at 7:30 p.m. This year's finals series will be between the Broadway Bruins and the Newmarket Shockers. Game one will be at JMU's Eagle Field, the Broadway Bruins hosting the Newmarket Shockers. It's a best of 7 series, and they will alternate between sites for each game. So game one will be at Broadway, and game two will be at Newmarket tomorrow on Thursday. It should be a very exciting series. Good to see two new teams in the championship series with the Broadway Bruins and the Newmarket Shockers. And I'll be listening from afar as I'm no longer in the Rockingham County area, but I will be listening on News Talk 92.1 and 550 WSVA throughout the championship series. So I encourage you all to tune in as well. It should be a good one.
If you're outside of Rockingham County like I am, where can you listen to it? You know, in Kansas, for example.
Yeah, if you're in Kansas like Trey or Richmond like me, you can listen on WSVA online or at rcblbaseball.com. Both of those sites have a link to listen to the live stream online of this year's 2020 RCBL Championship Series. Now let's do a little bit of history. Today in baseball history, going back to 1997 for this one, on August 19th, 1997, Wade Boggs made his pitching debut. The Yankees third baseman threw 16 knuckleballs and one fastball as the Yankees lost 12-4 against the Angels at Anaheim Stadium. Boggs threw a scoreless eighth inning, gave up no hits, and walked one batter while striking out one batter as well. So Wade Boggs made his pitching debut on this day in 1997. In 2004, for the Atlanta Braves, John Smoltz established the franchise record with his 142nd save in a Braves uniform. He passed Gene Garber as the Braves beat the Dodgers in Los Angeles 6-5. And on this day in 2007, John Smoltz again became the Braves' all-time strikeout leader when the Diamondbacks' third baseman Mark Reynolds became the 40-year-old right-hander's 2,913th victim. So John Smoltz had a big day on August 19th, 2004. He established the Braves' all-time save record, and in 2007 established the Braves' all-time strikeout record. Big date for Smoltz. Now, Trey, let's talk a little bit about your favorite team, the Yankees, because they've had a little bit of bad luck recently, but they're still playing all right, despite having three of their big stars on the injured list.
Yeah, LeMahieu, sprained thumb, groin injury for Stanton, and then obviously Judge, I think, with a hamstring issue off the top of my head. But Aaron Judge is fine. He'll be back on Saturday. He was on the 10-day DL. Sprained thumb for Mayhew. We'll see when he comes back. I think it's going to be a couple weeks. Obviously, I think it's a mild groin strain for Stanton. He said he's going to be out a couple of weeks. So big three for the Yankees currently beat up. Judge looks like he's going to be good to go to come back. But the Yankees still plug along. And so we'll see what they do. Obviously, they played the Red Sox this past week and were fine. We'll see what they do against Tampa Bay, between the two top teams in the AL East. So we'll see what they do against there. It helps with improved starting pitching. You throw Garrett Cole out there as well. But this happened last year for the Yankees. And you know what they did? They had one of the best records in baseball. So the Yankees have proven they have some great depth. And I think I think they'll be okay, honestly. For the Yankees, they just need to make the playoffs, and they will. So it's going to happen. And so I think Stanton is probably the most frustrating one because of how beat up he's been. He was playing pretty well before he got hurt, and he kind of feels that frustration. So we'll see what happens with Stanton. But moving on to another team, let's move to the Houston Astros. They finally got back over 500. They're 12-11, but their arguably best player is not playing well this year. Jose Altuve is batting 176 with a 242 on base percentage. He only has 16 hits, and this is a guy who's consistently in the top hit mark, one of the best hitters in baseball, and he is not off to a really, really good start. Altuve is just, you know, not playing well. 3 home runs, 10 RBIs so far on the year. So definitely struggles from Jose Altuve. And if the Houston Astros want to compete with how great the Oakland Athletics have looked so far, they need Jose Altuve to come back in a big way.
Yeah, you know, in the words of Dodgers analyst Oral Hershiser, it's a little bit harder when you don't know what's coming.
That's true.
I think that may be part of the reason that Jose Altuve is struggling this year. I'm just going out on a limb there. That could be part of the reason that he's struggling this year.
I think
he doesn't know what pitch is coming.
Yeah, most fans kind of are enjoying this. If you follow the Houston Astros Shame Tour on Twitter, which is actually a pretty good follow, it's kind of funny. It's been funny to see. So, yeah, we'll see what comes out of Altuve. Let's put it this way. I'm not upset he is struggling right now. So, but the Astros, man, 12-11 right now, I think, is their record. I know the last time I checked, unless they played last night. But how about the Oakland A's, man? That's them and the Rockies have probably been the two most surprised teams. But the A's are the hottest team in baseball right now, and they're looking really, really good. And I got to give a tip of the hat to you who picked them to win the AL West.
I did, and they are looking like a very good team right now. 16-7, the third best overall record in Major League Baseball. I mean, they are on fire, and they've got such a good team made up of a bunch of key contributors like Matt Chapman, Matt Olson, Ramon Laureano. They've got Marcus Semien at shortstop, like a bunch of really good players on this team, and they've just built themselves into a really solid franchise over the past couple of years, winning 90-plus games in the past two seasons. Now they're off to a 16-7 start, first place in the AL West, a 3.5-game lead over the Astros, and plus 33 run differential, which is among the best in the league. Of course, the Dodgers are just blowing everyone out of the water with a plus 62 run differential. And then you have the Twins and the Yankees at plus 38. But plus 33, that's pretty good for the A's. And I mean, they are a really good team. They're fun to watch.
Yeah, too. And with the A's, I think it's going to be something we have to wait till the postseason to see, because I think the expectation was for them to do this. And historically with the A's, they've struggled in the postseason. It's kind of the same situation for the Twins. I think those are the two teams kind of battling the, oh, we look really good, but let's see what happens in October kind of feel. And I think both those teams have a really good shot to challenge in the AL. You know, I say those are probably the two teams I'd take as the biggest challengers to the Yankees, with the Rays right there. So I think that's a good mix. So we'll see. I think I would edge Oakland over Minnesota right now as probably that number two team in the American League. And so moving to the National League, you talked about the Dodgers, but hello, Colorado. I mean, Charlie Blackmon, we kind of touched on last week, is playing at an MVP level. I think he deserves a part of that conversation. Dude's hitting around 500 the last time I saw, and he's been very good, obviously, playing at Coors Field. It does hurt him in terms of that. But the Rockies looking really, really good right now. 13-9 on the year, have kind of struggled of late, but still in that wild card spot. And that could be one of the surprise teams this year.
Yeah, and I think we have a weekend series coming up between the Dodgers and the Rockies. So that should be a fun one to watch. The two top teams in the National League West going at it this weekend. I think they're going to be in Los Angeles at Dodger Stadium playing that series. But it should be a fun one to watch. Charlie Blackmon, like you said, batting 432 right now in the season. There was a point where he was at 500. Now it's dropped, but 432 is still very impressive. I mean, even if it is a 60-game season, I'm still going to be impressed if he hits above 400 because that's
what
Yeah,
I think him and LeMahieu had the best shot. Obviously, LeMahieu's still above 400 before he got hurt. And so this was the year where you could see someone hit over 400, I think, in a 60-game season. And I put those two as the top two candidates right now to do it. And so it would be very interesting to see because Charlie Blackman's looking really well. And you know that Milwaukee's have great players. I mean, Nolan Arenado, one of probably the best third baseman in baseball. And most people said he's going to be a trade target come this year or next year. I think him, Francisco Lindor were the two big names, not expecting the Indians or the Rockies to compete, but both teams are. The Indians look really good too. I know we didn't really touch on it. I think, I mean, it feels like Shane Bieber's striking out everyone at this point, and he might strike me out before this season's over. He's the clear-cut AL Cy Young winner at this point. I mean, that kid is, you know, he's older than me. He looks incredible so far. So the Indians looking a lot like they're the team that went to the World Series and competed because this is still a team with a lot of great talent. And so if their pitching keeps looking like it is, the Indians could surprise some folks as well.
Yeah, they are doing very well. And Shane Bieber, like you said, Cy Young caliber pitching right now. But they lost two of their pitchers on their, you know, they optioned two of their best pitchers to their alternate training site because they broke protocol, which I think is a very good move for them. It looks very good on the organization that they're willing to option these two great pitchers. I mean, Mike Clevinger is one of their best pitchers on their team, and Zach Plesac, he's very good as well. So the fact that they were willing to option those guys to their alternate training site just because they broke protocol, I mean, that reflects well on the organization. It doesn't seem to have hurt them yet either.
Yeah, absolutely. And so I think you're right there. And if they get those arms back, that's going to be pretty impressive.
Yeah. So the Cleveland Indians off to a 13-9 start, just a game and a half behind Minnesota in the American League Central.
Wait, we forgot. The Orioles are 12-10. Like, they, no matter what, the fact that the Orioles have a winning record, and I almost put them in my top 10 this week. Like, the Orioles could make the playoffs. The Orioles could make the playoffs. If that happens, like, that just shows how crazy this year could be. That's 2020. The Baltimore Orioles, which was the worst team in the history of baseball last season, statistically, ever. Like, they had one of the worst losing percentages, almost lost the worst amount of games. They're 12-10. This is how I think about the Orioles. I could see the Orioles not winning another game the rest of the year. But I also could see the Orioles at this point making the playoffs because we have no idea what's going to happen.
Yeah, you're exactly right. I think that
the Baltimore freaking Orioles and the Marlins are 9-7. Obviously, they haven't played like half their games. But like, they're going to get to a point, and same thing with the Cardinals, where winning percentage is going to mean something. And it looks like they've made up all the Cardinals games, like with just a bunch of doubleheaders. But like, what's going to happen between if the Marlins and the Orioles make the postseason?
I don't know.
Both are in position to do.
I think if the Marlins and the Orioles both make the postseason, that would really signal that 2020 is, in fact, the end of the world.
It might happen.
If both teams make
it
the postseason?
Happen.
Yeah. Yeah.
It might happen.
I know a lot of...
If the playoffs happen today, the Orioles would be in the wild card spot. No, they're one game back in the wild card spot, excuse me. And the Marlins are in the wild card, or they're the second place team. So they would be actually, so this isn't set up for, so they, it'd be interesting.
Yeah. I know a lot of people that would make very happy if they were able to make the playoffs, the Orioles. I know a lot of Orioles fans would be very happy if that ended up happening.
You know what? I hope they do. I kind of hope they do just for fun.
Just for fun.
Why not? Like, I could
it's 2020. Anything could happen.
You know, like, let's. It's the Orioles. Like if they do, you kind of have to be like, you know what? I mean, and that's kind of what we talked about at the beginning of the year. Anything can happen in 60 games, a lot more than 162. And so, you know, we'll see.
All right. Well, Trey, we've managed to ramble on for another half hour episode of Foul Ball Area. I hope you're doing well out there in Kansas. I hope you have a great week. And I hope that we'll have some good baseball to talk about when we get back together next week and do it all again.
Yeah, trade deadline coming up at the end of the month. So trade deadline episode next week. I bet you it's going to be hard to figure out who's going to be a seller.
It's going to be either a lot of interesting stuff happens or nothing happens at all. Can't wait.
Exactly. Yep. Have fun finishing your move-in in the 804.
Thank you. I will. I'm looking forward to getting settled in and exploring this new city and seeing what all there is here. I'm looking forward to it. That's all I've got for this week's episode of Foul Ball Area. Thank you all for tuning in. For Trey Lyle, I'm Matthew Atkins, and we'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to the Foul Ball Area podcast. Make sure to leave a review and a rating wherever you get your podcasts, and subscribe so you get new episodes as soon as they come out.